Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are in this amazing planet of ours. I'm Malcolm Hawker. I am the host of the CDO Matters podcast, and I'm thrilled that you have joined us today. Today, we're going to talk about something interesting called the data doom loop. And to share his insights on the data doom loop, we have Mr. Ken Stott. Ken, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Malcolm.
Yeah, I was very intrigued when Ken reached out and said, "Hey, I want to talk about some of the things that I'm seeing within large organizations." And he had me at data doom loop. It was a topic that I'm interested in discussing more. Maybe we'll get into other topics of discussion as well. Just a little bit about you, Ken. You're the field CTO at Hasura. You are an API company, correct?
We are. That's a way to explain it.
Okay. Oh, well, I don't want to drastically oversimplify. What's the elevator pitch then?
It's more of a universal data access layer. APIs are part of it.
Okay. Well, that's certainly something that we can talk about if we still have time after we talk about the data doom loop, because this has been a topic that I have been really closely following for a while now. Just kind of talk about data access, data virtualization. Last episode, I was talking with the CTO of Denodo, Alberto Pan. I don't know if you run into Denodo, but we were talking about logical data layers and this abstraction layer that sits between operating systems and data warehouses, or sits on top of data warehouses, as it were, to be able to better access data. That's something I think is increasingly relevant in an age of AI, when we've got more and more and more and more data. And we need to govern it, and we need to put our arms around it. But let's start with the topic du jour, if we will. Share with me, what is the data doom loop, and why should a CDO be aware of it?
Well, first of all, it's meant to be a little provocative, so I'm glad that it provoked you. So, this is my theory. In large organizations, they're perennially unhappy with the results of their data ecosystem. And because they see that they're unhappy with it, they get interested in spending more money into it. What they do is they find new tools, new ways to do it. They layer it on top of that and actually create a more complex environment, which ends up making them unhappy about the results of their data ecosystem. And this loop has gone on for a very, very long time. And I think there are some data that supports this idea. So for example, over the last 3 years, spending in data has gone up at least 10% per year. It's projected to do the same again next year. And if you look at data maturity scores, pretty much flat, right? People are spending a lot of money, but they're not getting results.
I completely agree. This is actually something that I've touched on in a few of my presentations over the last couple of years, which is the idea that we're kind of like, I would argue we're in the golden age of data and analytics, right? Like our companies desperately want us to drive value from data, to use data as a lever to transform their organizations. But survey after survey, there's data to suggest that we're not progressing to that. So when it comes to technology, throwing more technology at the problem, which is what you're saying is kind of the underlying premise of the doom loop, I have a hard time thinking that anybody would argue that, because we do love to throw technology at the problem. But let's peel the onion a little bit on that, because when you try to do the inverse, right, when you try to maybe not make it about technology and make it about maybe people or process, I think you could argue some of the same outcomes happen. I think you could technically argue that maybe a data mesh movement, for example, which was by their definition socio-technical, mm-hmm. not just technical, yeah. but we're touching on the people aspects. One could argue that's pretty complex too. So is this a darned if you do, darned if you don't situation? How do we get out of this?
I agree that when you get on the people and process route, as a technologist, frequently it turned out to be unsatisfying in one way or another, right? It's extremely difficult to engage all of the stakeholders, right? Align them around these technical objectives and deliver against that. I think one of the issues with our data ecosystem is the diversity in the range of stakeholders that we have to satisfy. And I think what often happens is as people try to engage from a people process perspective, what they end up doing is creating kind of islands of technology that are kind of about 80% solution, but they fail to get the final integrations in place. And this is kind of where it falls down. It's all of the people struggling might be another interesting idea.
Could be.
Struggling to actually fill those gaps between these sorts of islands of technology.
Well, herein lies the either ends of this spectrum, I think, right? So on one end of the spectrum is this giant kind of centralized, monolithic, big, hard to update, hard to manage, hard, you know, arguably not responsive to change and difficult to innovate, one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is what you're calling these islands of technologies, which one could argue is a highly, maybe federated, for lack of a better word, a highly federated ecosystem where you've got a whole bunch of technologies to manage. Am I articulating kind of this trade-off well?
Yeah, I think you're getting there. And I was thinking more functionally, things like governance systems versus data delivery systems, et cetera. But also it could be organizationally, you know, markets versus trading versus loan systems, things like that. I do think it's an integration problem. And I think data mesh was kind of on to something because you cannot scale without federation, right? A monolith is never going to work. Centralization has diminishing returns. That's been proven over and over and over again. And yet, by the way, it's everyone's favorite approach is to centralize. But the problem is the integration that would support a federation solution, kind of what was articulated in data mesh, just hasn't materialized to a level that people can kind of comprehend it, use it, manage it, integrate it into people and process to get that sort of ideal state that Jean McDagany was trying to articulate in data mesh.
So you articulated what you say is the core of the problem as an integration issue. And I think I agree, but let's explore a little bit. My biggest gripe, well, I've got two bigger gripes with the data mesh, but one of them was the coordination that is still going to be required across domains for cross-functional use cases, right? Sales, marketing, finance. The idea that those groups would just like naturally want to cooperate with each other and integrate, for lack of a better word, I just don't see it, right? Like you have to at a cross-functional level to do quote to cash, but managing that is highly problematic and arguably why I have a paycheck, because I focus on MDM, right? And coming up with common definitions and trying to integrate at a data layer.
Right.
So I think the integration is maybe what you're onto, but then we can start to get into philosophical discussions about, you know, common languages and ontologies, yes. Definitions. Yes, and, yes. And so where are you from that perspective? I mean, what is the best way to integrate across domains?
By the way, you hit on something else, which is everyone motivated to actually solve this problem? Maybe they're getting paid to continue the issue. But I think that when you're, again, I do am kind of a mesh proponent. The problem is the tooling hasn't gotten us there. The philosophies to underlie it haven't matured quite yet, right? I do think that each domain in a semantic layer in your, was it marketing and sales? Were those the two you mentioned?
Sure, we can go with that.
Yeah, they have to sort of own their definition of data. They have to advertise that in sort of a semantic layer sort of form. So everyone loves the phrase data products now, which, by the way, I see as rebranded data mesh. If you dig into data products, that they still require you to do all the same things. It's just flipping the script a little bit around to the value side of it as opposed to the architecture side of it. But I think that has to happen. There has to be, again, some level of automation to take the individual sort of semantic layer definitions, glue them together with relationships that the individual domain teams define. And there has to be some oversight across the universal semantic layer that you're building to determine that the semantic differences aren't sort of becoming overwhelming, so that you continuously are refining that universal semantic layer to something that most stakeholders would be able to comprehend.
So this is another thing that we've been talking about a lot on the podcast, and I didn't intend for us to go towards semantic layers, but here we are. We've had a lot of conversations recently related to semantic layers, related to graphs, related to ontologies. I'm intrigued by this idea of what's called knowledge management and how to bring the mm-hmm. world of knowledge management closer to data management. But when you talk about bringing these worlds together and having some of the semantic differences not be, what I'm hearing you say is having them to the point of not being meaningfully different.
Yeah. Yep.
maybe like customer and account. If we can agree at a conceptual level that those are kind of the same thing and we just find a way to link them, that's fine, good enough. But there can still be bear traps there when you start talking about core differences in definition. Do you agree?
Well, customer and account is a great example. They are clearly not the same thing.
Right. Maybe an example, but party and well, yeah.
Party,
yeah, I don't know.
Counterparty,
yeah,
customer.
Yeah.
Those are all legal entities, individuals or legal entities of some sort. So yeah, there's certainly ontologies that can tie all these things together, of course. But I think sometimes it's not an ontology, it's just a preference in term. Those are the things you really want to kind of squeeze out of the system, right? The other thing when we talk about a semantic layer is it has to be operationalized in some way so that when people are asking for data or talking about data or coding those things, they're all using the exact same terms. And I don't know, and I'm sure you've been in this situation, but if you're like a support person and you get a ticket from somebody saying this thing in this system happened in this way, 90% of their time is usually trying to translate the end user's language to describe that into the way the developer maybe coded something, right? And these translation layers are incredibly expensive. And so the more we can reduce those translation layers, it adds value across your entire organization.
That makes complete and logical sense to me. And something you touched on there, I think is interesting, which is if it's just a different label, that's one thing. But if we're talking about fundamentally different definitions, that's another. I think for years and years, we've tried to attack this problem from so many different directions. You know, 15 years ago, it was this heavy-handed top-down kind of, you know, single mm-hmm. single something to rule them all. Well, we know that didn't work. And now where it seems like we're trying to say, okay, full and complete federation, let's go with that. I keep coming back to the original kind of premise here of this, these two ends of the spectrum, and how do we find the nice, amazing sweet spot in between the middle of all of these? And I'm not entirely sure it's an either or. I think it may be a both.
Yeah, I think the solution is not to change, it's to add some things. I think our overall architecture is missing components, right? It's perfectly fine to centralize to a certain level. It makes total sense. There are use cases that you ought to do that, right? But the parts that are missing in the overall architecture are really these integration layers. It's data access. To me, it all comes down to having the right data access strategy in your organization. And that you can think of that as a semantic layer that has been operationalized, creates the lingua franca that all organizations talk about, and you can do work using those terms, right? And to me, that's the big missing component, is some form of universal data access layer that allows you to propagate that semantic terminology across your organization and to operate using those terms.
So maybe we need to press on the definition of access, because I'm hearing you say, because access to me maybe is a little bit of a loaded term, because you know there's access and identity management, and maybe some might be listening to this in the podcast and thinking, oh, okay, well, you know, I've already got a tool for access management. But what you're saying goes well beyond just exactly what you're saying goes well beyond that, and actually even
data delivery access. I'm sorry to
interrupt. Yeah. No, that's no, and I'm glad we're talking about it, because what we're talking about here is not just are you seeing what you're supposed to be seeing, which is important, but it's also if I'm searching for something, or if I'm doing a SQL query for something, or if I'm talking about something as I'm typing notes into a free text field in a CRM, whatever that use case is that the terms that I'm using, or the terms that I'm looking for, or my intent accurately, or maybe not intent, or what is being represented is consistent with some idea of a governance policy related to that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so it's interesting then. What would you say to, and sorry, we're getting really philosophical here. Like, salespeople are using a CRM today, right? And salespeople have their definition of things that they're using day in and day out. And I think we run into, it's not problems is not the right word, but we run into difficulties when we need to change that operational definition to conform with some analytical definition that may exist at more of a cross-functional level, getting back to my concerns about the mesh. Uh-huh. How do you make those two things coexist happily? The functional definition and a cross-functional definition, how do you make them exist? Is that what you mean by an integration challenge? Can you just like logically link those things together?
I'm struggling with an example. So first of all, I don't think we're going to police the language that people use to
agreed.
Talk, you know, right?
Yeah, agreed.
If you want to type in a free text field some poorly articulated explanation of something, that's just going to be the way it is,
yeah. Right?
We're talking about the definitions of data at rest or in motion, so that when we apply a label, the label is a good explanation of the information that's contained within that element, right? The other thing I would say is, I don't think that there's a huge number of elements that are cross-functional, right? But I do think that the cross-functional ones are the ones that deserve the most attention. So again, my theory is that if you've operationalized your semantic layer, you now can observe how these terms are potentially being linked together, and you can apply other kinds of automation to determine if meaning is being misconstrued, if meaning is being obscured in some way in the way people are describing data elements.
I think you're onto something there, which I find interesting. I like the concept of data observability because it can be applied in so many different realms. So data observability is, you know, I look at signals, for lack of a better word, maybe exceptions, alarms, triggers, something. I look at signals in a pipeline and I may be even using some ML or something else on top of it to start predicting when the pipeline might fail based on signals that I'm seeing. What I heard you say, and I'm putting words in your mouth now, but I'd love to hear your perspective, which is, well, maybe we can do the same thing with how data is being used in the organization from more of a kind of a quality profiling perspective or some other sort of to look at and say, aha, there's something amiss here. And maybe that process is going to end up running slower, or maybe that process is going to fail because of some oddity within the data. Is that kind of the concept you were trying to?
I think, again, if you've got some sort of data access layer, you can observe how it's defined, right? So it's built using some sort of federation principle, right? There's a focus on the relationships, cross-domain relationships in particular, to determine if there are sort of semantic differences you need to sort of drive out. And not only is the building of that thing observable, but as data flows through it, you can observe the patterns that people have a specific interest in. And all of these things, you can do so many things, from anomaly detection, data validation, right at that sort of final egress point. And I think that's the big thing people are missing, is they're missing this sort of ability to dip into what people are asking for in data across an entire organization and see if it makes sense, right? See where things don't seem to be, maybe they're drifting, right? It used to look like this, now it's starting to look like this, right? Or maybe people are combining things that we could probably figure out that there was temporal differences, and that's not really a good way to combine data. No one can see any of that today in most modern architectures.
I love what you just said. I love it because it aligns to what I was trying to kind of articulate around some idea of observability. And you were saying observe the data. I heard two things there. One was what I could loosely call kind of buy side signals, right? Like signals that people, whether it's typing it into a search box, or whether it's chatting with ChatGPT or whatever, like in the consumer realm, there's all sorts of intent signals. Like I can go buy data about what people are searching for in the web and use that as a proxy to understand what do people want, not want. So I heard you say, one, we could be doing the same thing in data to better understand what people are looking for, searching for, using.
Great analogy.
Yeah, that's one. So that's the buy side. That's the consumer side, but also in the supply side, like within our pipelines or within our processes or with our data quality processes or MDM processes, to see, does what's happening on the supply side actually align to the buy side?
So again, I think that if everyone has a responsibility to sort of publish their semantic layer, right, along with expected relationships with other data domains, reference data domains, or other operational domains, right, transaction domains, we can evaluate. I lost track of the question. Why don't we back up for a second? Maybe we'll edit this one out. Tell me the question again.
understanding the signals to evaluate, right? Is how we're managing and governing data aligning to, the reality of our organizations, whether that is from what people want or even necessarily of how the business is operating, which I think is an interesting other angle.
Yeah. So, I think this basic activity that I'm describing, you can drive so many potential control functions from it, right? You can build governance from it. So you can build catalogs, search tools, right? You can build processes that look for semantic differences and make sure that those are resolved in some fashion, right? You can look at how people use data, how they combine data, and evaluate whether or not there are problems with the way that they're doing that. You can look for things like temporal differences or other things, which are perennially the problems that people run into, right?
Yeah.
You can drive a single consistent identity and access management over that data, right? And then you can determine if the right people had access to the right data. Those are all things you can do as you start to think about, how do I build some sort of understanding of who's accessing what data and how they're combining it? I think this idea of how they're combining is the thing that escapes everyone, right? All this stuff goes ultimately into things like BI tools or applications where people do all kinds of things that you're not perceiving. But if your ability to compose that data, right, and maybe aggregate it inside this access layer, is now you have visibility into composition. And when you have visibility into composition, you know how people imagine data should be combined to solve a specific problem.
Okay, that's interesting, because like we have a bit of a challenge in that once we've published the dashboard, right, or once people have exported that dashboard into Excel,
right,
the horse is kind of out of the barn, and heaven knows what's happening on the desktop with what they're doing with that data. You just use the word compose, or maybe they're refactoring the data, or they're doing something else to it. Like that, like whatever is happening in that secondary use, or the pivot that they're doing outside of the dashboard in Excel, that's it. That's
where your problem, that's half of your problems are starting there.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Right. Yeah.
This lack of understanding of the last mile of data, which no one talks about, honestly. Right.
Yeah.
So it's picking up so many problems there that you're not seeing. Right. We all focus on like data quality at ingest and building out some warehouse, et cetera, et cetera. All really important things, but it's not solving all the problem. It's solving just a part of the problem.
Right. Right. That could end up being the title of this podcast, The Last Mile of Data. As much as I love the data doom loop, I think which by the way, I fully agree with. And I do see that as a little bit of a downward spiral that is hard for companies to pull out of. But the last mile of data, for sure. Like, and I'm not so sure. I think historically we've tried to kind of control that. And maybe the answer is to just better observe. Using your word.
Yeah, absolutely. So even if, I like the idea of having an access layer that can do joins, composition, right? I like an access layer that can support maybe multiple query languages. So you can do SQL, but maybe you could do GraphQL. Maybe you could have just predefined REST endpoints, whatever, as a way for you to access data. But all of those languages imply combining data. We can observe how data is combined when they get there. If you don't have those services in your access layer, people start building it outside into sort of rogue systems and other things. So you want to have a rich set of access services that encourages people to use them and not build their own stuff so that it escapes your purview.
Yep. Oh, oops. Delicate choice of words on purview. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
that's okay.
Oversight. That's
okay. Yes, oversight. I'm just pulling your leg. I'm just pulling your leg. But purview is obviously a data catalog product from Microsoft. But all right. So you're field CTO, which means you're out there. You're in a hotel today, which means you are out talking with clients all day.
I am. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So what are you hearing out there, Ken? Like what's you know, obviously everybody's talking about AI. What are some of the, if you could kind of summarize the two things that you're hearing the most out in the field from a major challenge perspective? Obviously you're coming at it from the perspective of your company's technology, but I suspect a lot of the questions get a little bit broader. What are some of the things that are keeping your clients up at night?
So by the way, I mean, similar to you, Malcolm, I think I try to not sell as a field CTO. My remit is to really talk to people about the strategic objectives they have within kind of the data management space, and try to align our products, but other people's products to help them solve their problem. I'm kind of like a free consultant. I just happen to be paid by Coursera. So I do this all day long. I can tell you one of the more interesting things that someone told me just last week was they were really lamenting how much manual effort was put into regulatory investigations. And it was just driving them a little bit batty. But I would say it's been my experience as well. You would hope that with all this data governance, with all of this data to support how data is being used, when a regulatory investigation comes in the door based on data, that you could answer it pretty quickly. But no, typically, we're bringing in McKinsey, we're bringing in Deloitte, we're carving off 50 people from, you know, various teams, and they'll spend a couple of months to develop an answer to this question with thousands of spreadsheets and, you know, all this sort of effort that goes into it. And ultimately, they frequently don't develop a systemic solution to it. They just answer the question, right? And all of the time and money to do that, if we could redirect that into systemic solutions, it could be so much more satisfying and powerful and value-adding to our organizations. Anyway, I extended a little bit beyond what that person told me, but I thought that was a fascinating conversation.
Well, so, I mean, that does kind of touch on the integration challenge, because I suspect a lot of the challenge there is data silos, yeah?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
And that last mile, right? What always ends up happening is the question always turns out to be that last little bit that went into sort of developing a regulatory report or something like that. And oftentimes those systems aren't as observable as sort of the core part of your data ecosystem.
Interesting. Well, so I assumed naively, perhaps, that the your answer was going to be, well, everybody's talking about AI.
It always comes up. It's not necessarily the majority of our conversations. I think everyone just recognizes that AI has some potential solutions within data. Certainly that's part of our conversations. Like that semantic, like finding semantic differences is clearly a great AI solution that you can apply into data. Sometimes the conversation is about data prep for AI and building better data prep environments for AI. It's not the majority of the conversation though. Like at most, you know, somewhat less than half.
So where are you on the data prep for AI thing? Because I think we've got a little bit of a hangover happening in the world of let's just call it legacy or more traditional data management, which seems in theory to be not that well suited to Gen AI, which likes a lot of text. And kind of legacy data management is generally tends to be more structured. Where do you sit on that when it comes to data prep and you know, whether it is your technology or some other technology? Are you hearing clients out there talk about having to get their arms around all this text data floating around in their organizations?
Not specifically, but I think the things you're seeing make a lot of sense. The rise of data lakehouses, they're pretty organized around building data prep for AI, right? For building AI data sets. That makes tons of sense. I think that sits below most of the things we've been talking about, right? Frequently, these are domain level issues where I'm in sales and I'm, you know, gathering all the sales data and I'm trying to develop some sort of AI data that I can feed into an algorithm. Sometimes they're cross-domain. And in that case, I don't think most of the heavy lifting for AI is particularly cross-domain. By the time you get there, these data sets have been reduced through those sorts of other sort of domain level sort of analytical processing. But yeah, that's sort of what I'm saying.
It's not the be all and end all for people that are trying to solve problems that your companies help solve. And I'll be honest.
It's super critical and they're spending a ton of money, but it just doesn't turn out to be the problem that I'm engaging them around. Right. And that just isn't the number one thing we're discussing.
Well, one could say one is more of the foundation of the house and the other one is deciding what fancy fixtures maybe to put in it. And I'm kind of downplaying AI. That's not fair. But from the perspective of the domain centricity there around AI, that I could not agree with more, particularly on the marketing side, right? Where there are data scientists sitting in a marketing function where they're trying to build propensity models, for example, and they don't have to deal with any of these cross-functional challenges. They don't have to deal with necessarily with how finance defines a customer. All they can look at is their sales transaction data and say, okay, you know, did they buy it or did they not buy?
About 80, I'm just making these numbers up, but to me about 80% of all the AI activity is domain-based. When you're getting into cross-functional, you're usually using more distilled data sets or you're in a domain and then you're maybe pulling in a little bit of cross-functional data, but again, it's more distilled data sets. But your big, you know, sort of large data set is your domain data set.
Yeah. Now, that said, I think to do some of the things that we were waxing about earlier from a cross-functional perspective and plucking out and observing kind of the state of data and the state of your business, I think to do that at scale, you're necessarily going to need to rely on some form of AI to look at transactional data, to look at time series data, to look at all of this in you know, relatively scalable ways. Right. With a ton of data, I think AI is going to need to be applied there.
But so all that observability data is a really rich data set for AI. And I think I mentioned it before, AI as a solution to, you know, managing our data ecosystem has lots and lots of promise, but you've got to build some observability layer, right? That shows how your data is being used. And it has to be using some common terminology. So that's why the semantic layer is important. So if you can do all of those things, now you can go to town with AI and drive out so many fascinating insights.
And on that, that is a great note to tie off on. Thank you, Ken Stott, for all of your wonderful insights. Thank you for indulging me in our philosophical discussion about definitions and ontologies. And I've really appreciated your time today, Ken.
Well, wonderful, Malcolm. I thank you for allowing me to spout off a few theories.
Love it. All right. So if you stayed with us this far, thank you. I hope you've enjoyed another episode of the CDO Matters podcast. If you haven't subscribed, please do so. If we're not connected on LinkedIn, please reach out, connect with me on LinkedIn. I share a lot of content every day on LinkedIn. I'm posting podcasts, I'm posting white papers, you name it. I would love for you to join our CDO Matters community on LinkedIn. With that, I will leave it for now. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you on another episode of the CDO Matters podcast sometime very soon. Thanks all. Bye for now.